Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Jason Snell. Jason, how are you?
I was fine until they cut off my antenna.
I have this thing on the back of my neck, but I'm sure it's fine.
Don't run over there, though.
Yes, I was two things I predicted, one correctly, one incorrectly. Mm-hmm. When that guy was running towards, it's pretty obvious his head was going to blow up when he was running towards the fence. So I predicted that happening. And I turned to Marisa as we were watching it, and Book was talking to the antennaless Andorian. And I said, that guy's going to die. He didn't.
And he didn't. I know, right? That was kind of a surprise. Nice. Little twist. He's horribly injured, but survives.
He survives. And of course, we're talking about Star Trek Discovery's latest episode, Season 3, Episode 6, Scavengers.
Scavengers! I don't know why I said it that way, but that's what I said.
I don't know, because you're so excited about it. I will say, my least favorite episode of the season so far.
Agreed. It's funny. Because I've had these episodes that I've been like, oh, wow, I really like this. Like, it's better than the sum of its parts. And I think this episode is less than the sum of its parts. I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see why you, I mean, I don't even know. I'm saying, it's not like I didn't like it. I thought it was fine, but I thought it was the weakest of the season. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking this over in our Slack earlier today, the way, sort of what I came to was, the idea that I think as a plot outline, this episode is perfectly good at what it's trying to do, which is reset the Discovery. We learn at the beginning that they've been, you know, a few weeks have passed and they've been refit with 30th century or whatever technology, which is great. I think a great way to do it, off screen and say, we've upgraded you. So you're not, we don't have to dwell on the whole, like, why would anyone be afraid of a 900-year-old ship? Right? Like,
that's true.
They're like, okay, we're working on that. And everybody gets their fancy badges and all of that. And they do that. And they're like, okay, Michael has to go rescue Book. And, it's, we're learning more about this, this Emerald Chain thing, which is obviously a, you know, clearly a big deal. And we're trying to learn about the burn and the secrets about that, but also the Burnham being gone for a year. Basically, she disobeys an order because she's not the same person she was. She's and Saru, and she faces consequences for that. Even though she's doing a good thing for him and gets good info out of it, she's ignored a direct order and she gets dressed down for it. Like and there's also some like bonding with Burnham and Giorgio and like there's a bunch of stuff going on here and there's kissing that happens.
There's some kissing at the end. Yes, spoilers.
All good. All like, okay, that's great. I think this episode isn't as good as it could be because I think the execution of that story isn't great. I think it's okay, but like I think they made a bunch of choices. Like here's the best example I've got, which is so Giorgio comes with Burnham and to save Book and get the black box from the, which is a silver tube, not a black box. By the way, it's more of a misnomer. It's a misnomer. It's a misnomer.
Misnomer,
it's
yeah.
a silver tube. Yeah. So
black boxes in airplanes aren't black either.
So. Exactly right. They're orange and boxes. But so she has to pose. Giorgio poses as this because she's, you know, good at this sort of thing as an awful, you know, arms merchant or whatever.
She's good at it.
And she barges her way in when they're like, no, it's simply not done. And she's like, well, I'm going down there and you try to stop me. And they're like, all right, fine. And she introduces Burnham as her, you know, her subordinate slash servant, right? And this is one of those thoughts where I thought, okay, there's an opportunity here since they're playing this for some kind of funny business between these two characters where they're obviously frauds and also that she could like treat Burnham like she's a subordinate and that they would maybe there'd be some like that you're going too far now, like looks, meaningful looks and stuff between them. Because I'm not sure why you make it so obviously this pretense if you don't have a whole bunch of like pretty good material to back up the pretense. And there isn't any. And that's sort of my objection to it is like, well, why'd you do it if you're just going to let it lay there and not be particularly interesting. Like, why not, why not just take that stuff out yet? And that's how I felt about the whole episode, is like, I get what they're doing and it's fine. And yet throughout, I kind of, it just felt kind of flat. Like, it could have been better. Somebody should have said, you need to do a rewrite on the script, is really what it felt like to me.
Oh, someone should have said, this could be better.
This could be better.
Thrown it in his,
like, some jokes. I mean, either take out some of the pretense of Giorgio and Burnham or put in some jokes. But
yeah, it felt like they didn't use that at all. And I, my main complaint with this, although this, like you said, this episode had many interesting things. I think the most interesting thing is continuing to explore what's happening with Georgiou.
Yeah.
She's having these flashbacks and something's up with her, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought that was the most interesting part of this episode, and kind of Burnham's and Saru's relationship and what her decision had repercussions for him. And he made a mistake, she made a mistake. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
I was, frankly, bored by the let's go to this planet and rescue book, because I felt like I've seen this story before.
And this is kind of what...
not that interesting.
This is kind of what
it's
saying,
Rorapente.
Too. It's like a... You've got your fraud, you know, they're like, to take it to our Dungeons and Dragons games, right? They're basically like, we're junkyard inspectors, right? There's this ludicrous pretense that they go in there under because they want to find book. And good help is hard to find. The Orion who is running this scrapyard
At his job.
Yeah, he's very bad at his job. So they're there and they find book. And like, and then they gotta do, and then there's the, you know, there's the field and the little discs on their necks, and their heads explode if they leave the field. So they're like, what are we gonna do? And they're like, I got a plan. And this is another thing that I didn't like about this episode is, Scott, what exactly is the clever hijinks, the plan, the Ocean's 11 style scheme that they're gonna get book out of there and free all the prisoners and save the day? Because as far as I can tell, the plan is, you guys stir up some trouble and we're gonna take
this guy over the head and take his controller.
Yeah, we're gonna hit him and take his little button and push it, and then you run away. The end. And like, again, I would really rather have seen a little more heisty kind of razzmatazz. Mm-hmm. Like, we gotta do a duplicate, or we gotta do some sort of weird tech thing, or you guys have to push this button, or do run a little con on the. And it's not. It's like, literally, on the signal, you guys all make a lot of noise and start hitting the guards. I'll knock this guy over the head with a heavy thing and take his little control and press the button, and then we leave.
And you guys run. Yeah.
Which is just like, what kind of heist is that? It's just boring and dumb.
Good heist. Yeah. And I thought, you know, they set up the Andorian who was clearly mutilated because of something he did, right? They cut off his stalks there, which is interesting. Sad, but interesting. And I thought, so they've set him up as kind of this collaborator, and he has to install the explodey discs in people's heads because his family will suffer if he doesn't. So everybody hates him. And so I thought, having, you know, intimate knowledge of the explodey discs thing will be part of this plan.
It's going to come into play, or they're there's going to be a moment where they have to trust him, even though they don't trust him, and it's going to be like this. He's going to have to prove that he's trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. And all he really has to do is talk to the other prisoners and say, "Hey, let's
go
blow this popsicle stand."
Yeah. Again, like, okay. Why all this detail if you're not going to use any of it? And it's just like, I don't know, like. I there's great moments in there. I do think, talking about being boring, I can't believe, and this is a debate that's happening in Star Trek, it's happening in Star Wars with the Mandalorian, like, there's this fan service versus not. How do you go to a junkyard that is theoretically full of Federation equipment from the last 1,000 years and not have way more hilarious trinkets found that are from...
What, a phaser from TNG?
Yeah, there was a TNG phaser. That was something. I was surprised there wasn't more stuff like that. How about like a positronic android head, or I don't know. But again,
just had Data's head.
Yeah, right. And it's just another missed opportunity, I feel like, in all of this, that there's like, the setup is all there, and you're like, oh man, this is gonna be so good, and it's just, you know.
Yeah.
It's fine.
No, they do reference self-sealing stem bolts. So they get 2 points for that because, of course, that's a Deep Space Nine reference. So good job on that. They don't show us any self-sealing stem bolts, but they reference them. Although I think in the episode, the Deep Space Nine episode, I'm not sure if we ever see self-sealing stem bolt either.
Not sure we do.
Nor do we ever find out what a self-sealing stem bolt does. But
it seals itself, Scott. That's what it does.
I guess it does.
It seals itself.
But yeah, and so I guess we can quickly, there's not also a lot of plot in this episode, which I think is your main criticism of it, Jason, because there's, you think, okay, this is literally a plot to get them out of this prison, and there's not much plot at all.
No. Not a lot to hang on. Yeah. It's like this is a very lightweight thing on which you hang a lot of style, and there's no style to be found, which is like, all right. Yeah. It's fine.
It looked nice, I suppose.
It did. It did. The makeup looked good. I think, like, the Andorian, we see the close-up Andorian and stuff, and I'm like, wow, that is, like, a really cool Andorian, take on the Andorian. There was on the Ready Room this week with Will Wheaton, they talked to the guy who's the creature designer, basically, and he made the point that is so true watching Discovery, which is HDTV shows detail, and so you have to reconceive makeup and monsters for that level of detail, and I was struck by it with the Andorian. I know Enterprise was in HD, and they kind of redid the Andorians for that too, but like I was just very impressed, because we see that guy really close up in several shots.
And he looks,
like,
really good.
Yeah, it looks really good, and it's like, this is what Andorians look like. It's great. Like, there's a lot of good. It does look good, and the guy... This guy's head blowing up was a very impressive effect, and
it looked good.
And book I do like ship the, takes itself apart and goes back together and shoots at people and stuff, and that's all pretty cool. Yeah,
and I like their take on Orions as well. So the Orions all kind of look like beefy. Well, the men just look like beefy doofuses, and generally, all the Orion men we have met so far have been beefy doofuses. So
indeed,
that's good job there, Yeah, I mean, this episode, I'm just disappointed. Not angry, just disappointed.
No, I just it's a letdown after the last few. It does advance the story with the burn. I guess that might have been part of my objection. Is if you're going to go through all of this to get the black box, it would be nice if we maybe got a little bit of that in this episode. But even that is withheld for the next episode. So there's not a lot of forward movement there. I honestly, the one thing in here that I really do like is the Burnham Saru. Relationship and the fact that we're told she's gone for a year, without them, and then she joins back up with them in episode 3, and you really can't just let that go, right? You have to pay off that she has changed, and it's going to have consequences, and here are the consequences. Is she's essentially maybe not even suited for Starfleet, but if she is, she's got to really adapt, because she's sort of the captain of her own ship. That's separate from the Discovery at this point, and she's got a mystery to solve. I'm a little frustrated that the jerky admiral doesn't say, you know what, go ahead and solve the burn. And instead, they like have to do it on their own. But the Saru, she's essentially betraying Saru. It reflects badly on Saru. He's trying to impress his new boss.
Not cool, man.
That part I thought worked really well, and the fact that we do see that Burnham, like, we understand why she did it, and it's because she's got priorities that are beyond following her orders, which is fine, except it's not good if you're in a command structure, right? And so that was all... I liked that, and I was thinking about this while I was watching last week's, that... does anybody remember that when Burnham was the famous mutineer?
It seems like most people have forgotten that.
Right? So in this episode, I was like, there she is. There's the famous mutineer right there.
Yes. And she says in one of the good – well, I don't want to slam. There are many good moments in this episode.
Yeah.
And one of them, Burnham says to Philippa, I rather regret something I did than something I didn't do, which I think kind of sums up Burnham to a T, right? She is a person of action. And if she thinks something's needs to be done, she will do it. And I did enjoy the Saru Burnham thing and the level above it that, the Admiral says, hey, Saru, you made a mistake too, because if you had told me what Burnham was going to do, perhaps I would have said you guys should do that because it seems important.
You have a whole other ship to do a mission, right? Like, it's not like she could have said, we need to do this and I'm going to take his ship. And he could have gone to the Admiral and the Admiral would be like, sure, as long as Discovery stays here, take that other ship, whatever, right? But nobody's talking to anyone else. And I like that they called them all on it. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you ask?
And it makes sense, though, too, because as we said, Saru is trying to impress the Admiral. Like, they just appear and say, you know, we're from the past, trust us. And the Admiral, as we saw last week, rightly so, is like, I'm not so sure if I should trust you. And now, so Saru is like, well, we need to be in something that I think I really enjoy in Star Trek is when, you know, you, in order to, fit in, you feel like, oh, I have to be the most of this thing. So I have to be the most Starfleet officer ever so that this Admiral trusts me. And that's what Saru is trying to do. And Burnham is just kind of messing it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's good. Like, and the Shenzhou gets a mention too. And it's like, I haven't felt this way about her since the Shenzhou. And you're like, again, mutineer, right? Got her captain killed. And I like that's not coming good. Back because this is the question about Burnham is like, I don't think there's a question about her wanting to do the right thing, but there is a question about where her loyalties lie and if she fits inside the command structure. I think that's all good stuff. Like that we've got these two characters who we like and who we think are doing the right things for the right reasons, or at least trying to do the right things, but they're still at odds. I like that. I think that's a fun dynamic.
Yes. And they're building it up because Saru goes to talk to Tilly and he says, hey, Tilly, can you tell me why Michael Burnham left?
Oh, so good. I love that scene.
And she's like, well, I can guess, but I don't really know. And so Saru is, wondering what to do. And basically Tilly says, you have to tell the Admiral, because if you don't and he finds out, which he probably will, it'll look poorly on you and on the rest
all
of the crew.
All the rest of us. Tilly's come so far. I love Tilly. Mm-hmm. She's come so far.
Tilly's great.
She's just got. Also, she's got to find a cat, right? Wait, come on,
that was great. I gotta say, I enjoy Grudge. So, thumbs up to Grudge, who, as I remarked to Marisa, must be a much better actor than Number One.
Than Number One,
Grudge is showing up a lot more than Picard's doggy did.
Yeah, I like that. It's that it's like, hey, Michael, you in here? Oh, there's just a cat. Oh, I know what happened, right? Like, it's like, yeah, okay, like, all right.
I did like when she said, "Did you eat her?"
another little super tiny subplot we got is we get a couple of scenes with Stamets and Adira. Yes. We haven't heard anything about Adira being sort of debriefed as Tal and finding out what Tal knew about whatever Tal's mission was. Like, we don't get any of that. I assume they're just kind of holding on to that until they need it later. But we do see her back on Discovery talking to Stamets, and there's a, you know, she's giving the spore chamber an upgrade so that he doesn't have to he can just put his hands in goo instead of in having those funny things in his arms that get attached via hardware, which is nice, and Hugh appreciates that very much. Mm-hmm. And then also they have that bonding moment talking about how she's like, you know, my loved one died, but they weren't really dead, you know, and nobody understands me. And Stamets is like,
I like that moment when she said, he sees her talking to herself.
Yeah, so
she's
right.
Not talking to herself. She's talking to Gray. And he says, you know, I'm no judgment. I'm just curious what you're doing. And so she said, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. And his response was great. It's like, you don't know what goes on around here.
Oh, man. Are you talking to your dead boyfriend who is trapped in a mushroom ghost in a mushroom dimension? Well, not quite, but let's talk more. Like, let me explain what's going on. And that's this guy. Also, I like the idea. Nobody wanted the Adira is our new character who is talking to a ghost only she can see. Like, how long can that go on? So to have it not go on and have it be like, no, immediately, because it's a Star Trek and everybody is, they're going to believe you when you say, my dead boyfriend is actually still walking around and I can see him, even though, the symbiote, and they're like, oh, Trills, that's weird. That's not supposed to happen. You know, okay, instead of So I call in, get to, go to sick bay, right? And yeah, it's good.
It's in the manual. It's fine.
We need to get over that. Like, we need to, you know, she needs to open up and explain what's going on to her crewmates.
Yeah, we don't need to have a bunch of scenes of, you know, wacky hijinks while she's talking to herself and people have misunderstandings.
Right.
We don't need that.
No.
And so this episode dispenses with that. And there's a nice scene with Hugh and Stamets and kind of talking about, you know, why do you think you were gravitating towards this person? And he says, oh, you know, we both lost someone and then they were reborn, basically. And, you know, so that was nice.
Yeah.
And I think that the last scene, also very nice. So that's the culmination of the Saru Burnham thing. Saru, Burnham comes back. Saru is angry. They have to talk to the Admiral to tell him what happened. He yells at both of them. And then he leaves and says, hey, Saru, I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, take
to
care
decide.
Of it.
What's that? You're the captain. Mm-hmm. You decide. I've got, you know, to go stand in another white room and point at some holograms. So yeah. See you later.
I got other people to intimidate. It's not just you.
Exactly. Everybody's afraid of me. So I've got to go. And so Saru, makes a very, difficult decision, but I think the right decision. And he says, you know, he acknowledges that, hey, Burnham, when I asked you to be my number one, he didn't exactly jump at the opportunity. And it's clear from this incident that it's not working out. So you are now, you know, just chief science officer, not my number one. And then he walks off. He's sad. And, Burnham, I forget what she says something to him about maybe he made the right decision or something like that. And then the last scene is Burnham taking off her new fancy Starfleet communicator thing.
Yep.
What does that mean? We don't know. But we'll find out on the next exciting episode of Discovery.
Presumably, we will. I mean, I guess.
I don't know. Or it could just have been her, you know, having a moment and thinking, do I still even belong in Starfleet?
Yeah, well, I think it's a good question. And in the long run, this is Star Trek Discovery and it's her show. So I think the answer is going to be yes. But to have it be a little bit more open and that maybe she needs to step away in order to solve this mystery. And she's doing it for the right reasons and it will benefit the Federation. As she says, and I think this is a thing that if the Admiral wasn't, you know, focused on being an intimidating jerk, that he would maybe even you know fund the operation, which is you know, although it is very judgmental on her part because she's only just arrived here, but what she says is, until we know what caused this, I don't think the Federation can heal itself, can fix itself. And that's that is on one level very presumptuous. It's like you just like, wow, this place is a dump, I gotta fix it. On another level, you know, maybe it's that like they can't deal with it. And he did say, I think last week, right? Like we get so caught up in the details of this. And maybe we do need to think about the bigger picture.
We have to send replicators to this one planet and, you know, we got to keep the trains running.
Right. Right. So I feel like that's probably where we're going is that Burnham and Book are going to do some more sleuthing and work and coordinate with the people on the Discovery, but that there's a potentially like she's going to go off on her own to a certain degree because she's got the scent of this mystery and she needs to solve it. And, you know, I could see that. That's okay in terms of pushing the story arc along. I still have a great deal of concern about the source of the burn and that big reveal and that it's going to turn out that it's either Burnham's mom or like Tilly's, you know, grandniece, or it's Saru's sister who's been in a, you know, suspended animation for 900 years, or like, I just don't want it to be something that's so like connected to the people of Discovery, but for there to be a secret cause of the burn that maybe has ramifications for like why society is the way it is now. Sure. That might be a cool thing to reveal that. And then the sunlight comes in and disinfects it and that allows the Federation to heal. That's a pretty good story arc, but maybe Burnham does need to solve all that on her own or with Book.
I worry.
With her, kissing should with we, Book.
Should, I have a theory that I'm sure is not right, but we should fire off the conspiracy.
Okay,
phaser.
So before we fire off the conspiracy phaser, I have one last thing about this episode to say, which is they all get the little new badges that are con badges and their tricorders and yes. their personal transporters.
Great running gag,
all in one. And then Linus keeps appearing mm-hmm. in all sorts of annoying places and going, "This isn't sick bay or whatever," and then double tapping and getting back out because you double tap to return to home apparently on those things.
Of
and
course you do.
I thought that was funny. Linus the Saurian, the running comic relief of Star Trek Discovery.
He is fantastic. Oh, and that, before I fire off my own conspiracy phaser here, I did want to say that Book and Burnham have so much more chemistry than Burnham and our secret Klingon.
Oh,
that
man.
Is not even funny. And so they kiss in the turbo lift after Linus briefly interrupts them. It's believable. Like you sense that these two characters, yes,
they
should have been kissing all along.
They should have been kissing all along. If only that cat weren't in the way. And I'll having been critical of this episode, you know, I don't think it's bad. I actually just think it was a little dull and not up to the standards of the rest of the mm-hmm. season. But I will say that when they are in that key moment where they're trying to escape from the junkyard, and it's very tense. It's like they did a good job of establishing tension in that moment. I just wish there had been more to it than, you know, everybody run and
run
we'll try to steal that guy's little box, little remote control. And I just wish there was more to it. But it was, they did a good job of establishing the tension. And I liked the fact that then they're being chased and shot at and the ship mm-hmm. is shooting back at them. And that was all, I think, well executed. I just wish there was more to it.
I did enjoy that scene with the ship and coming and blowing up stuff and Georgiou. Oh, and that. So, Jason, tell me this.
Yes.
Once again, another thing has popped into my head before we go into our conspiracy corner. Georgiou, of course, is at the helm of Book ship, and she's shooting people and having lots of fun. And then off they go. A subsection of the people on that work camp, one assumes, has rushed off to be on this transport ship.
Yeah.
And then Georgiou shoots at an old ship that is kind of hovering above the you know, industrial area that they've all been working and completely destroys the whole building, which leads me to believe that hundreds of innocent people have just been killed.
It's possible, although I'm not sure how many people were actually at that site. And, of course, the Orion guy fled with his personal transporter. So it's possible that they were all just sort of bugging out once the...
Oh, that's true. I forgot about the personal transporter.
The jailbreak. They could have all gotten out of there, or at least some of them could have gotten out of there.
I will accept that.
All right. That's what I got. That's all I got.
that is acceptable. And I think we see in that shot, we do get a reference to Miranda class starship, I think, is up there. So a USS Reliant type.
So nice.
That's fun. All right. So are anything else we should talk about this episode overall? I agree with you. It's one of those Star Trek episodes where I think it's fine, but it was, you know, most Discovery episodes, every episode up until this point, I have not succumbed to the temptation or even felt the temptation to look at my phone and do something else other than watch Star Trek Discovery. This episode, maybe I looked at my phone a little bit and scrolled through some things.
Yep. No, I agree. There were definitely some moments that were a little bit dull, and I think they didn't. They just didn't nail it like they did the others. But it was fine. It just wasn't
it was,
good.
Yes,
not exactly. up to their high standards of this season.
That's right. And so we'll now, since we're about to enter conspiracy quarter, we should talk about what's happening next on Discovery, mostly because I was going to ask you, Jason, during this episode, I was going to say to you, I don't think we've seen any Vulcans or Romulans. And then the coming for next episode, you get all the pointy ears everywhere.
Yeah, next week.
Next week. This week. No Vulcans or Romulans that I saw.
If you're afraid for spoilery speculation, step away and we'll see you next week. But now we don't know anything, by the way. We don't know anything. We're just going to speculate. But some people get worked up about that. So here comes the speculation as we enter the conspiracy corner by firing the conspiracy phaser.
Ooh, thank you for the sound effects. It's a high budget show we have. Yep. So here's my slight conspiracy, Jason, based on the Admiral's reaction when Burnham says, "Hey, you know, I have some information about the burn. We should really check it out." And looking at his face,
yeah,
seems to me he's reticent to check it out, which made me think, is the Federation or Starfleet the cause of the burn? And he knows already, and he doesn't want her to look into it.
I think
that's my thought.
I think that that is a possibility. I think that he, you know, they've been saying, oh, well, you know, we're just too busy, and none of there are lots of investigations, and they haven't gone anywhere. But yeah, once you get closer to an investigation, like finding the answer, if watching the X-Files taught me anything, it's that the closer you get to the truth, that's when the people who don't want you to find the truth come out of the woodwork. And so I think that's there's an opportunity there for the show to do that if they want to. My hope, actually, is that what the story does is that is a feint. Like, it turns out that they do know more than they're saying, but it's not that there's, like, an evil conspiracy involving the Admiral and involving Starfleet, but that there's another level, like, the reason we have suppressed this is because, and then there's another reason, right? Like they had to suppress the real story of the burn for reasons that are not like, wahaha, we are bad. And we did this in order to, you know, maybe the Federation was already collapsing and this, you know, was, I don't know what that is. Or was there a conspiracy within the Federation or within Starfleet? I'd prefer it not be any of those things. So
Peter Weller.
My hope is that it's more of a, it was an inside job. No, please no. I am intrigued by the fact that next week we have pointy-eared people. And it is, I think I said this on an earlier episode, and Will Wheaton mentioned it on the Ready Room, that episode is indeed titled Unification 3, which means it's the follow-up to the Spock two-parter from The Next Generation, Unification 1 and 2. I love that they are making a part 3 of a thing that aired in the 90s, but I think the purpose of that title is that presumably we're going to see a unified Romulan-Vulcan society post the destruction of the Romulan Empire, and what does that look like, and are they our friends or not? And I still think that there's a possibility that the Vulcans / Romulans are actually the ones who are the
culprits,
the bad guys here. And wouldn't that be a great twist to be like not for us, not for listeners to the Vulcan Hello, because we've known all along that Vulcans are kind of
jerks.
Kind of jerks. Like, yeah, like I know we love Spock and all, but like Spock also thought they were jerks and kind of ran away from them. So it would be interesting if that was the case. I don't know if that's the case exactly, but I think next week we're going to get that, you know, we're going to get a lot more information about that corner of the Star Trek universe with the Vulcans and the Romulans.
I assume part of it for next week is that the Vulcans have left the Federation.
Yeah.
They're one of the founding members of the Federation, so that's a big deal. And the unification is not only the Romulans and the Vulcans unifying, which I think is probably correct, but then at the end of that episode, one assumes they will say, okay, Burnham, you with your scrappiness, you have convinced us to rejoin the Federation.
That'd be nice with the Romulan and the kids
and
the
have
Romulans
the Romulans come along.
Joining as part of one unit. Okay, so while we're in the conspiracy corner, do you have any theories about Giorgio and what is going on with her since David Cronenberg, talked to her with his glasses?
I'm still enjoying David Cronenberg's character, even though he wasn't even in this episode.
Nope.
Fantastic. Georgiou is also a fantastic character, and giving her some depth and vulnerability here is not something that she's comfortable with as a character.
It's
and
so
that
good.
Is clear, and it makes it so good. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I have, so they mention David Cronenberg mentioned in the last episode that the mirror universe and our universe have been, you know, drifting apart ever since some particular event has happened. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there's some kind of weird science, techno-babbly thing that's happening, that her universe is drifting further apart from where she is now. And so that's making her, have flashbacks or something. I don't know.
Oh, it could be. I mean, I like that theory. You could even say it's a theory that with the universes drifting further apart, she's not like maybe she's suffering from something because she can't live in this universe because it's too far apart from her.
It's like rejecting her or something.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be that could potentially be a setup of like, we need to send you back to your universe or back in time or something so that you cannot you know, just get, you know, rejected by this universe. Mm-hmm. There's the possibility of, like, it actually, you know, they need to reconnect to the mirror universe or something like that. Or is it possible that people from the mirror universe, like, fled? Is it possible the mirror universe caused the burn? Like, did they do something, or did they blow themselves up? And it had this ramification throughout other universes. That would be interesting. So, like, there's, there was a flash of the Terran Empire logo in one of her little flashes that she had. And that made me think, like, there's definitely wanting us to think that the fact that David Cronenberg's character is so, you know, interested in the mirror universe and all of that, like, that there's something there. It may be a fake out, but who knows? I agree, though. I like that Giorgio is vulnerable because, you know, as fun as that character is, they really haven't given her a whole lot to do. Last season, it was just like she's with Section 31 and all of those guys are jerks, and then they all get taken over by control. I like that this season is really saying, like, one, she's vulnerable, something's going on and she doesn't understand it, and two, it, you know, rekindling this idea that the only reason she's really around is because she has this attachment to Burnham,
right,
that she isn't comfortable with. And she says in this episode, right, like, the mirror Burnham told her
that
she cared and then tried to kill her. And, like, don't forget that although she's attached to our Michael Burnham, in some ways she's attached to our Michael Burnham because she raised the other Michael Burnham who then betrayed her with Lorca. So, like, that's that they're reaching back to, like, old first season kind of lore, which I think is good to remind, to, like, anchor these characters a little bit and tell you how far they've come and maybe, you know, that they might backslide a little bit. I think that's all good. But beyond that, I don't have any other theories. I feel like something involving the mirror universe or her being rejected from our universe or something like that is what's going on here. But I don't know either. Yes. But it's good to see her wrong-footed because she's otherwise so confident that it's kind of annoying.
Yes, and she that character can teeter into one note territory, which is where you don't want her
sarcastic remark, punches some people, sarcastic remark,
unflappable. Yeah, that's fine. But Michelle Yeoh is so good in the role that I think she even in those moments where it's kind of one note, she elevates it. So that's there. They lucked out there. But I think that this has been an interesting addition. And I don't know if they're flashbacks. Are they flashes from the mirror universe? Who knows? One assumes we'll find out. But interesting. Yeah. A lot of blood. Her flashbacks there, her episodes, I'll say. We'll call them episodes.
It's true. And with that, Scott.
Jason, you shouldn't fire a phaser indoors.